This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, Georgie, check for Dadsy. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery free and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Uber Eats hates late, but occasionally something unpredictable happens, causing your double bacon cheeseburger to be delayed. And on the off chance your order is late, we'll make it right with 3 months $0 delivery fee with a free Uber One membership. That's kind of a big deal.
On time claim based on latest arrival time shown after order is placed. Offer ends 2/19/2023. Current Uber One members not eligible. Subscription will auto-renew at $9.99 each month, starting 3 months from initial enrollment. See uber.com/UberOne for terms. Benefits available only for eligible stores. Order minimums apply.
Man, there were some long-range goals there. No tap-ins. It was all outside the box. And
too lazy to get out the pitch.
Is that what it was?
Forestieri. Here's Hogg. Dini! Do not scratch your eyes. Do not scratch your eyes. Do not scratch your eyes.
Welcome to the Do Not Scratch Your Eyes podcast. Joining us today, Richard Johnson. Good evening, Jono. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. How are you guys?
We're doing well, mate.
Living a dream.
Yeah.
A bit annoyed that I'm watching you two drink wine. But
yeah.
Well, you've got to That's join the party.
So, I don't think there'll be too many that will be surprised at that anyway.
Fantastic. So, Richard, you are, I think, in a very elite group in being... There's not been many Australians that play for Watford, I think I'm right in saying. What brought you all the way from Australia to Watford?
God, how long's your podcast?
Oh, as long as you want, mate. As long as you want.
As long as you want, mate. Free for all. Go for it.
I was always brought up around football. So my mum and dad were originally from Preston, up north. My dad was an apprentice at Preston North End. Got released after the apprenticeship, and then a couple of years later, I answered an ad in just a local paper up there. They were starting up the Australian League. They packed their bags, got married quickly, and went over, immigrated to Australia. So always sort of been in and around it. They moved to Sydney first of all, and he played for a team there, and then he got put into a team in northern New South Wales, which is basically the Hunter Valley, the coal mining area.
Okay.
I was born and bred in Currie Hospital there, and part of the Coalfields area, which predominantly, to be fair, was sort of more rugby league than football. But because of Dad, I was sort of always around football. He was not bad, to be fair, and they had a strong expat community there at Western. So they had quite a few Scottish lads, English lads. They were a very good team. So I just sort of followed in his footsteps, if you like. But yeah, to come over here was always a dream, I suppose. And Dad always said to me that, look, if you want to play professional football, then you've got to be in the UK. It just sort of came about. Played all my junior football, obviously, in Australia. And then it was probably about 15, 16 years old. And I made the New South Wales Catholic Colleges schoolboy team.
Okay.
And then we went on tour to Argentina and Chile.
Wow.
So that was around sort of 1990, I suppose. And then mum and dad were in the UK for Christmas. So I flew from Argentina to the UK, spent Christmas with them. I had 3 weeks at Liverpool on trial.
Wow.
Steve Highway picked us up from Southport Cricket Club. took us into training. So I had 3 weeks there. I did quite well, to be fair, as well. But they just sort of said to me that, listen, you're not better than what we've got. So didn't really get offered anything there. And then I had a month at Middlesbrough. But 2 weeks into that, I pulled my thigh muscle and got injured. So that cut that short. So I left the UK that Christmas, went back, finished school. Tried to finish school. it's a high school certificate it was back then. So equivalent to the GCSEs, what they are here.
Okay.
And at the end of that, the old man just said, look, if you want to go back over, then we'll support you. So, yeah, wrote some letters. I had a contact over there that knew a few people here as well. And Tottenham, I know I'll keep this a little bit quiet. You can edit this if you want. But I used to support Tottenham as a kid, really. Oh, so I used to like Glenn Hoddle.
Okay, that's fair enough.
It's not the worst thing in the world.
No, it could be worse.
Yeah, yeah. That, yeah.
So Tottenham replied and offered me a trial. So I flew back 16 years of age on my own, leaving the family behind. And, got picked up from Heathrow by Len Cheesewright, who was the chief scout then at Tottenham. And, he picked me up Heathrow November 1990, I think it was. And then, the rest is history, I suppose. I had probably about five months at Tottenham. I had a couple of youth teams at the time, so all sort of pretty much predominantly all the players at Tottenham's youth team came from Lillyshaw, the football school of excellence, really. So my age group was Nicky Barmby, Darren Caskey, Danny Hill, Sol Campbell, sort of
all
in and around the same team that I was sort of playing in.
Yeah.
Patsy Holland at the time, who was the coach of the B side, he wanted to keep me. but Keith Walden said that I wasn't any better than what they had. And then it was just by luck, really, an old player from Watford, Bill Shipwright, who played for Watford. So he had a couple of connections, obviously, at Watford, and it sort of went from there. Steve Perryman, ex-Tottenham, was manager at the time.
Wow.
They phoned Watford up and said, look, we've got this lad here, not quite up to our level, but might want to have a look at him. And then, that was it. Got on the train, went and played an under-16 game for Kenny's youth team, and he signed me straight away.
Fantastic.
There you go.
Great.
All wrapped up in
That's quite a road, though, isn't it? Like, especially, like you say, you put it in perspective, like 16 years of age to come over, you know, not just another country, but the other side of the world, and to go and do that. Fair play to you, mate. Jesus.
I was quite lucky, really. Obviously, with my parents being English, I was able to get a British passport.
So
I never really played any representative football for the young Aussie team. So I didn't really have any international experience. So having that passport was probably the only reason that I was able to stay at the time. So I was pretty lucky.
Were they putting you in digs and stuff with families and things?
So I left Australia in November, and where I'm from, we're sort of just a couple of hours north of Sydney. It was 30-odd degrees in November leading up to Christmas. landed at Heathrow and in a blizzard. And it was like the doors opened, snow was coming out, I had all these bags with me, and I just thought, what have I done?
What have I done? Not going out there.
Len Cheesewright had this old Ford Sierra, and he must have had a German Shepherd. So I was like covered in dog hair. Bags in the back, and he literally said about two words to me all the way back, and I got put in with a lovely family, to be fair, but it was right at the back of Lower Edmonton Station.
Right.
Don't know if you know the area.
Yeah, I know Lower Edmonton. Yeah.
High rise sort of council flats and everything. Well, drove into this estate. There was a burnout car over there. And, I'm just like holding on. I've got white knuckles holding on to the door thinking, where are we going here?
Yeah.
And pulled up in front of this house and just said, look, that's your landlady.
Yeah.
Knock on number 7. Walk through the station in the morning. Get onto White Hart Lane. You'll get the number 5 bus to the stadium, and then you'll meet everybody there the next day. So,
welcome to North London. Brilliant
experience.
There's none of that about now, though, is it? I mean, it's all about like that. That wouldn't happen nowadays, would it? It's completely different.
Yeah, it's all changed now. Basically, you can't sign international player until they're 18 now. So
yeah.
Until they're 18, sorry. So obviously they can come over and trial and train with the club, but unless the family moved with them, so unless my family moved over with me and lived here with me, it's difficult to do it. It has changed quite a bit, but
that's a long way away.
I look back at it now, to be fair, and I do wonder sometimes if it probably was a bit too young.
It's young at 16, though, isn't it?
Yeah, that's young. Those first couple of years being away from the family and everything like that, it was pretty tough. Although it was a great life experience for me, you have to grow up pretty quick. You do miss a lot of growing up, like having.
There was no communications. There was none of this in those days. Yeah. There was no Zoom, no Skype, nothing like that. You were just sort of relying on long distance phone calls and stuff, I guess.
Yeah, and I wasn't the best communicator, let's be honest.
Left morning. Australia, never phoned back.
We haven't heard from
Sunday
Richard.
Sunday mornings, we had an agreed time all the time, and I was always off out or something, missing calling. My dad was an only child, so his parents moved out to Australia with him, and my granddad, because my dad used to work shift work and play football he worked in the coal mine. Coal miner for 30 years. So it was my granddad that used to take me to quite a lot of my football when I was young. And he used to write me a letter every week, a letter a week. And he was a mad gambler. He used to like the horses. And every week there'd be like $50 or $60 in this letter. And at the end of every letter, it's got, "Don't tell your nana."
So. Quality.
I've still got all those letters, to be fair.
That's fantastic.
That's awesome.
That's brilliant. That's cool. Brilliant. So you came to Watford in the...
91.
Yeah, so I did about probably 5 months at Tottenham, and then did about, just under 18 months, I suppose, finished off my apprenticeship at Watford.
Right.
So pretty much, 91, and then signed pro in 92.
So, those are fairly... I wouldn't say dark days, but they're not that memorable, that sort of period, for me anyway. I think that period, the early 90s, was a bit kind of, it was a bit nondescript, wasn't it really, Carl? It was a bit...
I was just going to say, it was until we kind of get onto where Graham, comes back, and there was that period, obviously, late 80s, early 90s, where we just stumbled and fell a little bit, didn't we? And there wasn't really anything that was like you can sort of look back and go, wow, we did this, we did that. It was a bit of a, not say non-event, because obviously it's part of the history, but there's nothing that I really look back on that and go, yeah, that was good.
No, not really.
I know I look back at it, especially when I first came. Obviously, I made my debut at 17, which was... unbelievable for me. Just getting the pro contract was everything I ever wanted. So that was sort of one ticked off. And then I made my debut at 17. But I look around at that period of time, and Steve Perryman was there, and we had an experienced team.
Mm.
Some really, really good players. I remember coming up playing in the Rezzies and that. Glenn Roeder, obviously.
Yeah, awesome. God rest him, yeah.
Passed away. There was Glenn sort of just coming to the end of his career, supporting all the young lads through the Rezzies. Luther was still having a kick about then. And then you look in the first team, like players Alan Devonshire and Peter Nicholas and Joe McLaughlin, who come from Chelsea. So that we had experienced players, and for whatever reason, it obviously just didn't click. I thought I had a pretty good day. I was Cambridge away. We beat them 1-0. I think Steve Butler scored the winner.
Yeah.
I didn't play for about 12 months after that.
Not as impressive as you thought. Yeah. Absolutely. So if we move into the mid 90s, then there was a period certainly where there was a swing upwards in our fortunes, which would have been when Graham Taylor came back. And I'm thinking particularly of the 97, 98, 98, 99 seasons where we, promoted twice in 2 years, which was, for a fan, absolutely fantastic. If we go back to the 97, 98 season, obviously there's a few games that come to mind. One of them would be at Kenilworth Road, where we won 4-0. Now, you scored the first goal in that game, a left-footed screamer. from outside.
Pretty much.
It was.
It was the daisy cutter. The keeper jumped over it.
I know it dribbled along the floor, but it went in.
The keeper could have put his head on.
Well, he could have done. All right, okay. All right, well, don't put it down, Jono. It was for us, we were dancing and celebrating.
Listen, any goal against that lot, it's a screamer.
Yeah,
all right?
Exactly.
It was left footed, so I'll take a screamer.
Okay.
Yeah. Not a daisy cutter. Yeah.
All right. It was along the floor, but it went in from quite a distance. So, we had a chat with Peter Kennedy about this match, and we were talking to him about what was said at half time, because obviously at half time we were 4-0 up, and we were romping the game, and then the second half was a bit more muted. We asked him what was said at half time, and he sort of said, "I can't really remember, but I think Graham Taylor probably said, 'Take it easy, second half.'" Can you remember what was said in the dressing room at half time?
Yeah, I think GT was a little bit worried of us scoring another goal and there being riots.
Well, there would have been as well.
You could have feel it. Yeah,
I don't know if you meant, because I was there, but I remember the horses coming on at half time.
Yeah, they did.
The horse mounted police come on, and I thought, that ain't good. That's going to end badly.
They were banging on Lenny Lawrence's dugout as well. It's like bang, 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 bang.
I was just about to say that. I remember seeing Luton fans going for Lenny Lawrence behind their own dugout.
So that
was just an amazing day, special day. I think before GT said anything, he gave Di Thomas a good roasting for taking his shirt off.
Well, he did, didn't he? He did. He ran away with it over his head, didn't he? Waving it over his head. Yeah. So did he actually tell you to calm down?
Tight tops that they've got today.
No, that's true. That's true. So did he actually say, "Look, listen, second half, just take the foot off the gas and take it a bit easier"? Or
to a degree, but not specifically like that. But he was concerned about the supporters going a bit mad and it sort of getting out of hand. So that was sort of the gist of what was said, I suppose.
Okay, I think we could tell because it wasn't quite as pacing.
Well, we should have had a penalty in the second half. That was a stone waller, wasn't it? And the referee was like, "No, I'm not giving it." You could tell, couldn't you? He was like, "I'm not giving that."
Was that when Roddy Rosenthal went over? Was it?
Yeah, I think it was Ronnie Rosenthal got fouled, didn't he?
Yeah, it was Ronnie.
Yeah. It was a stonewall penalty, and he bottled it. He was like, "No, I'm not giving that."
Yeah. But that was a fantastic
good day,
season. Though. Oh, good day. I mean, mate, that day was absolutely, for me, it'll live long in my memory forever, because it was just, 4-0 after half an hour or whatever, you're thinking, I can't believe I'm seeing this. It was just brilliant. And to do it.
It's one of the first, whenever you speak to Watford supporters or anything like it's one of the first
things.
I bet it is.
It's the first for me.
Yeah, I bet it is. Yeah.
Just a quick one, John. I just wanted to ask, just on the back of talking about that and Graham Taylor, we've spoke to a good few players now, as Justin said, and that have worked under Graham. Is there any sort of memories you've got of Graham, or a story that really stands out for you, like personally with Graham Taylor, where you thought funny, or just something that maybe sticks in your mind with him?
Listen, there's loads of memories that I've got, but just a sort of an overview for me is I probably wouldn't have had the career I had at Watford if it wasn't for Graham. So I owe him quite a lot, to be fair. Obviously, with Steve Perrin making my debut, Glenn Roeder, even with Kenny Jackett, really, I wasn't like a set regular, if you like.
When
Graham sort of took over the reins from Kenny in that season, he just must have seen something in me or showed a little bit of faith in me, but that was obviously the best period of my career, so I owe that to Graham. But I think with the gaffer, it was he was fair with everyone, to be fair, but you had to show that you wanted to play. As long as you gave 100% commitment, determination, did everything you could, he'd stomach you having an off day. But as long as the effort and the attitude and, like I said, the commitment was there, he backed you all day long. That's what sort of player I was anyway. I wasn't that skillful, but I was a grafter. I worked hard, and I think he sort of bought into that. But it gave me confidence to go out and play. And I think that period, 97, 98, and the following season where we got promoted, I was pretty much injury-free. I had some terrible injuries as a player coming through, and probably that those two seasons, I was pretty much injury free and had a good run of games. But yeah, just admiration for him. He was unbelievable, really. Although some of the training sessions and stuff like that were sort of a bit out there. Like we used to do pattern of play before games, but without the ball, so we'd all be in our positions and like we'd have to pass an imaginary ball to each other and move and achieve it, come out the other way and pass another, like not even kicking a ball. So
yeah, that's a bit different.
Listen, he was fantastic, and I dare say that anybody who ever spoken to about him says the same.
Yeah. I mean, I was just going to say that everyone that we've spoken to has got some sort. You know, even we spoke to Michael Hyde recently, and he tells a great story where he got left in a pre-season friendly because him and Charlie
Miller put their hands on each other's knee. Yeah.
At a team photo. Yeah, so it's just stuff like that. And when you actually speak to the player, I mean, look, as fans, we love Graham Taylor, you know, implicitly, you know, for what he'd done for the club. But when you actually hear it from players and, like, you know, players like yourself, where you're still at the club now, you know, in some capacity. So that's still the link to Graham Taylor, you know, even what you're doing now. And we'll come on to that later. But it's really cool to hear it from, you know, every player's got just a little snippet that's slightly different. You know, Nicky Wright remembers getting a rollicking because he didn't track the back post and, you know, it different things at training and stuff like that. And then when you put it all together, it's actually like...
It builds a picture, doesn't it? It builds a picture.
Our feelings towards him is something. But actually, when you build the picture, he was like so ahead of his time for a manager, you know, like for the stuff he was doing. It's incredible. Incredible.
Yeah, I've had chats with Kenny Jackett since... Kenny was my youth team coach. He was pretty much a father figure to me, being away from home and everything. And even Kenny used to say that sort of GT used to see things in a game before that even happened. He'd know what was
going to go.
Yeah. Mm.
Wow.
To have that sort of insight was pretty special. But like you say, obviously we had the success on the pitch, but I think it was his legacy before that. In that first spell with Elton and what he did with that group of players coming through the divisions. But Watford as a club, generally, as a family feel, it's very community-based. And I think he drove that. So we were well rehearsed in that when we became players, and it was sort of our duty that we had to follow that on. So doing community engagements, going to schools and... just things like that. Graham made us do that. It was part of being in the Watford family, if you like.
And fantastic.
I think that's special as well.
Yeah, massively.
So the following season, then we had a day out at Wembley, which for Watford fans is rare. Very, very rare.
Well, end successfully anyway. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, ones where we actually win. You were part of that game, weren't you? You played in the match at Wembley. Did you have your family over from Australia and all that sort of thing?
I was quite lucky because I remember that season we were sort of just floating around mid-table, weren't we, with about 11 games to go.
Yeah,
and
it was
then
a hell of a
run to get in the playoffs. And you're drinking your red wine first.
I am. Sorry, Jono. Yeah. So cheers.
we snuck in the playoffs and obviously drew Birmingham. So as soon as I knew that, I phoned Mum and Dad flew over. He got over for the second leg away at Birmingham.
Oh, really? That was quite a spirited affair, wasn't it, that game? Wow.
Yeah. Quite the atmosphere. He was in with all the Watford supporters.
Right.
Watching with everyone else, and then obviously
if I was him, I would have gone, I'm Jono's dad, and he would have paid for a beer all night.
Come this way, Mr. Johnson. Yeah,
I'd done it with Craig Cathcart. I met Craig Cathcart's dad at Wembley. He went, oh, I'm Craig Cathcart's dad. I went, put your wallet away, you shall drink free.
Yes.
Awesome. I remember I think I ended up taking the old man to Kudos that night.
Get in. That is quality.
When we spoke to Peter Kennedy, he suggested that he should have a statue outside Kudos, didn't he, for the two goals that he scored against Luton.
The two goals he scored two goals at,
he said,
he thinks I should have a statue outside. Well, Destiny, he called it. It was Destiny to him, wasn't it?
Of course it was. Destiny.
Yeah, I bumped into you before in Destiny, actually.
I think, dear.
Yeah.
And that's where that story ends.
That's another podcast. That one.
So Wembley then. Obviously, you had your family there. Your dad was there. Was you know? Have you got any great memories of that day?
What I was going to say. So the old man, he was there for the second leg, and then obviously we knew. So Mum flew over for the final for the Wembley game.
Right.
So Mum and Dad were both there. So I was pretty lucky, to be fair, to have them there. But they treated it as a special day because growing up in Australia, especially, obviously, one, I wanted to be a professional footballer as a kid, which I sort of I managed to do. And then growing up in Australia with sort of the big expat community there was, we always used to have FA Cup parties.
Oh, right.
So,
cool.
Yeah. So all these sort of Poms and Scots used to get together and have these big FA Cup parties. And probably one of the only nights we used to get to stay up till about 2 in the morning because of the kickoff. The different times.
Yeah.
So it was always a dream of mine to play at Wembley, albeit in an FA Cup final, but a playoff final was good enough.
Yeah. You went up the steps and lifted a trophy, mate. That's more than we'll ever do.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to say I had to pay to go up on the steps at Wembley and lift a trophy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Taken.
The tour.
And it was empty. It's not quite the same.
Yeah, no one there. Yeah.
Yeah, special times. I look back with fond memories of that day.
Just on the day, and I won't say what the other players said, but on the day, so you're in the tunnel. What's your feelings going out on that pitch? What's your overriding sort of kind of a emotion?
Just pride, really. But I knew in the changing room that we were going to win that day.
There we go. That's what I wanted to hear, because that's what they've all said.
The togetherness and the feeling we had. We were all in a huddle before that game in the changing room, and we had all suits and shirt and tie on because it was obviously a special occasion for us. And GT saw Bolton turn up and they had their tracksuits on, like they'd been there, done it, and they just thought they were going to rock up. They had a good team, to be fair.
They did. Loaded. These, like, Good Johnson was playing for them at the time, yeah.
But we sort of, I definitely had a feeling. I knew we were going to win before we even got in the tunnel. Just had a feeling.
I mean, myself and Justin, like, as I say, I don't want to keep going back over it, but we spoke to a few players that are part of that team, and you don't realise now, especially when you look back at it, how good that team was. Even the season before, you know, the players that we had and the little partnerships all over, that, you know, even like Alec Chamberlain was immense that day, especially in the final. He was immense that day. And then you look at, you know, you got Pagey, you got Robbo, you got Alan, you know, and he brought players in like Alan Smart and Nicky Wright, which I remember at the time, a lot of people were kicking off about that. Oh, we've bought two players from Carlisle, like two kind of unknowns from Carlisle. You know, I thought we were going for promotion, and, you know, what a sort of two-finger salute that is to the people that doubted it, because Graham knew the potential of what they were, and it was just brilliant how he got it all together and just to stick. And like you just say, he created such a, you know, like a feeling probably that we've struggled to get ever since, really, you know, because the reason I say that is probably because of the consistency with the management and the way we are as a club at the moment, which is another thing. But it's hard to get that and to really build something when you're kind of always looking over your shoulder, there's going to be a change. Do you know what I mean?
It's a strange feeling.
It's not a feeling I've probably had since, you know. And I remember on the day, and I've said it before, Bolton fans that were turning up at Wembley, because we were, obviously, we haven't got to travel far, and a lot of the Bolton fans were coming into Watford to then get on the trains. They turned up thinking they'd won. Yeah. You know, they were so cocky and confident. And I forget who told me, but it was a player, but I actually forgot about it. We beat them twice that season. You know, so it shouldn't have been like that. It was a weird day, but I remember coming out of the ground and this guy giving me absolute pelters before as we were going into Wembley, absolute all the time, you know, why have you bothered turning up and blah blah blah. And as we come out, we were walking past this burger place, like a Wimpy or a Burger King. Other burger franchises are available.
Are available,
and he was in the window. He was in the window. So I was like, bam, 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 bam. And he's just face down.
That was great.
What a day. And, you know, Nick Wright to score that goal as well was just, you know, something different, wasn't it? You know, what a goal to score. But, fantastic times.
Yeah, going back on the lads, on the team, the gaffer just had a sort of a knack of finding those types of players. Mm. But I think he did his homework, to be fair, on a lot of players, making sure they were of the right character.
Mm.
I think during that sort of successful period, we had a team pretty much that would have, I know it's a cliche, but run through brick walls for each other.
Yeah.
Probably weren't individually the best players, most skillful players, but as a team, we were fit and we used to grind teams down. And we just had a sort of togetherness that got us through games, to be fair.
There was a spirit. There was definitely a spirit. And you could feel it as a fan as well. You could actually feel it, that there was a good feeling running through the team. It was just, you know, those two seasons were magical. Just great fun to watch football-wise. And to be part of it was just amazing. It was really good.
Yeah.
Loved it.
I've had many a hangover because of you, Jono.
Yeah. And we haven't even been drinking with him. How does this work? Yeah.
No, I haven't. No. It's still his fault, though, isn't it?
That's all right. I'll take that blame.
Take that, mate. Yeah. But no, it's crazy. And you look back at I assume it was Micah, but who was your kind of like roomie or person that you used to sort of hang around with at that time outside of sort of as maybe outside or you know
yeah,
who you used
I,
to
I got to be honest with you I got on pretty well with everyone, to be fair. Obviously on the pitch it was Micah. He's the best player I've ever played with throughout my career, really, just for the fact of the success we had, but the partnership we had. But we actually got along pretty well. I still see him to this day, talk to him. And when he was academy manager at Dagenham, he brought me in. I coached the 15s for a little bit for him. And but on the pitch, we sort of just complemented each other, I suppose. He was skillful, Micah. He had a great engine on him. He could pick a pass.
He could run, couldn't he, as well? He was
We were fit. I mean, Graham Taylor used to say, lots of teams play with three in the midfield then as well. And he just used to say to me and Micah before games, like, just pick up one and a half each. So me and Micah were always doing doggies.
Yeah, okay, we'll do that, yeah.
I never used to forget because but obviously I like to tackle. Aggression was sort of part of my game, to be fair, but GT always used to try to get us to intercept rather than tackle. So reading the game. So he'd sort of say, get yourself in a position where you can close out, but if he passes it, you can go and intercept and you don't have to tackle. Just little things like that that sort of changed my outlook on the game.
Sort of breaking the play up rather than...
Yeah,
you know, like getting stuck in. Yeah.
But no, just in general, I was friends with whoever wanted to go for a beer, to be fair.
Love
quality.
It.
That's awesome.
I kept quite close to everyone. I look back now and I still speak to most of them, most of the boys.
Nick Wright was saying there's a WhatsApp group where you all sort of still talk and catch up with each other.
Yeah, that 99 squad, because a few years ago, on the anniversary of it, I organized, because I was back working at the club, obviously. And,
yes.
We organized a reunion dinner.
Yes.
So it was held at Shendish Manor. And basically every player on that day either played or was on the bench. We got back. So Ronnie came back from Belgium. We got Michelle over from Belgium. Alan Hazan come from Israel.
Wow.
So we had probably had about 250 people sort of jammed into Shendish Manor and just relived that whole sort of season, if you like.
Yeah.
In the playoff final. So
that was a great season.
To have that as a team and people to still be in touch, I think it's quite rare.
These days. That's 20 years ago. Years ago. Yeah.
Such a transient sport, isn't it? Players come and go and people move on. But that we had a special bond with that team. And, like Nicky said, we still keep in touch to this day.
Amazing. That's cool. Amazing. Do you have any memories of the Premier League year? Because, again, that was another one of those seasons where I remember a few games, but largely I just remember turning up and watching us lose heavily.
Just before you sort of answer that, I think because I was going to ask you a question, because obviously you've been part of teams where players have come in and you've got that togetherness that you've just spoken of, you know, you've got that, and then you try and add different players from different cultures and probably don't necessarily get it really what it's about. And I think that's probably quite hard and probably what Watford suffered with a little bit when it was, you know, basically promotion. Ah, right, now we need to go and throw some money at it.
You look at that, obviously GT tried to pick players with a little bit of experience, but you look back at it, predominantly the squad that he kept faith pretty much with the boys that got promoted from second division, if you like, up to the Premier League. So it was a massive jump in sort of ability, if you like, and the Premier League back then. I know it's fast and furious now, but for us coming from sort of second to winning the playoffs and then going up, it was a big jump. But I think Graham at that time pretty much wanted financial security for the club.
Mm.
So although I think it's 20 million we got, it's like 120 million now.
Yes.
It shows you
where it's gone. Yeah.
But that 20 million to the club back then gave us financial security. And he didn't really go out and spend loads of money.
No.
He sort of tried to back us group of players. And
yeah,
I suppose looking back at it now, the some individual players obviously did quite well, but I think over a long season, obviously we just weren't good enough. But it was a fantastic experience personally for me, a dream come true. Again, playing the Premier League, I think when I was fit, I sort of had my moments. I did okay. But I remember, I think the Liverpool game where Tommy scored, we beat him 1-0 away. I think
away at Anfield, yeah.
So I did my knee. Steven Gerrard sort of went over on my knee, and I did my medial ligament, and I was pretty much out for two and a half, nearly 3 months with that. And then I sort of came back, did okay, and then third last game, I think we had Man United at home, and that's when I did my knee.
Is that when Micah got sent off?
Yeah, that was...
he had a row with Nicky Butt.
Indeed, they both got sent off, didn't they? Yeah, that was a really weird game, because they'd already been... crowned as champions, we'd already been relegated, so it was one of those sort of games you think, you know, it's a bit of an odd game. But you did make the trip to Old Trafford bearable by scoring that goal, because I think we lost 4-1, I think, but you volleyed the ball in from the left-hand side of the goal, didn't you, if I remember rightly?
Yeah, couldn't really celebrate too much.
But you scored at Old Trafford.
You did make that bearable for me, because I went to that match, and it was a long journey home, I can tell you. But yeah, great goal. Yeah. Great goal.
It was quite funny, because obviously Mark Bosnich was in goal.
He was, yes, that's right, yeah.
Yes, he was, yeah.
So I scored that goal, and then probably about 3 weeks later, I got invited to my first Aussie squad. So we had a couple of games against sort of a mixed Brazilian squad, if you like. They were preparing for the Olympics, but they had a couple of, like, Ronaldinho was playing for the Brazil team. Yeah, so they had Danielson, they had a few boys. Ronaldo, old Ronaldo, was supposed to come back, but he didn't make it. But
chubby Ronaldo.
Yeah. Got the camera off.
Yeah, that's why I'm down here, but yeah.
So I went back, got included in that squad, and I remember we were staying in a hotel in Sydney, and then I obviously had to get changed, go down on the bus and go training, and Bozza was sat in front of me. And I sort of put my arm through and, like, tapped him on the shoulder, and he just sort of turned around and he went, "You were lucky," like that.
That's a great goal, that was.
Moments like that, obviously scoring at Old Trafford, scored at home against Liverpool.
That was a great goal as well.
We were literally talking about that before you come on.
Xavier Gravelin laid it off, didn't he? And you whacked it in.
Yeah, just side-footed it in.
Yeah.
So memories like that, you're never going to lose. And the Liverpool game away, the hairs on the back of your neck standing up, you know, before... because obviously I went there on trial, didn't I? So I've got my mum kept a scrapbook of everything for me from when I was like 6 years of age. And there's a picture in the scrapbook when I went there on trial. So I'm looking out the window at my mum and dad, who've sort of taken a photo with me on the bus. We used to get changed at Anfield and then go to the training ground. So there's Kenny Dalglish sat at the front. There's Ronnie Whelan. Who else? John Barnes, Jan Mulby, or like all on this picture that I've got on this bus. So there.
Nice.
Like,
yeah, nice.
Go back there, and obviously such a tradition with the club and everything. And when we were sort of stood in the before the game, you know, just before the kickoff, they hold the scars and sing your name.
Yeah, yeah, the cops sing, don't they? Yeah.
Oh, mate, it was unbelievable. So yeah, good.
But
that's
kind of why you want to be a professional footballer, isn't it? To play in front of to score at the Kop End and all the stadiums around the world that you can name all of them. But that's the whole reason why you set out on that journey, isn't it? To do that. So you must have been. Yeah. I guess that's where being a professional and being somebody that used to play Sunday League at Castlebury Park, go out hungover, vomit guts up, and then that's my professional standard.
That's your weekend.
Whereas you've got to focus on trying to play at Anfield with that. You know, that takes some doing. That's the difference.
Yeah, guys like that, I've got so much admiration for, because they still love the game, don't they? They still want to play.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just what we love to do, and we were lucky enough and privileged enough to get paid to do it. So
yeah,
that's true.
Yeah. And then that is true. You just round the wrong time, really, because now the money is mega.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got to be honest with you. I'm not one to look back anyway. Fair play to what they get now.
But is it too much too soon, in your opinion? In my opinion, you've got potentially 17, 18-year-olds who haven't kicked a ball in their life and they're earning 17 grand a week. I don't know.
I personally think it's spoiled the game to a degree.
Yeah.
But that's
not the game.
That's not the player's fault. Yeah, yeah. So if anybody in any walk of life would take that sort of money,
of course it would. Yeah, of course it would.
I think it's the game's fault, really, the way it's gone. Obviously, the ridiculous amounts of money they pay for the TV rights now for the Premier League. But
yeah,
I think probably some sort of responsibility with clubs for those young pros that sort of the Liverpool, not to, I don't know, just to give them the contract, but obviously just give them enough what they need to live off, keep the rest, and then when they're 21 or
they 18, can have it, yeah,
above, then that's their responsibility. But sort of 16, 17-year-olds at some clubs now are earning 5-10 grand a week, even more.
Yeah, and never kicked a ball really in the for the first team and stuff like that. It's scary, I think, more than anything.
And I think the landscape's probably changed a little bit with COVID and sort of the financial constraints now. So it might change. I think there's talk of salary caps coming in at League Two and stuff like that. So
yeah, because we were talking when we spoke to Mike, because his lad was at Colchester.
Colchester.
Yeah, he got, obviously they've had to make so many cutbacks. They've had to let him go. But it's players like that. I know. Obviously, his situation is his dad was an ex-professional footballer, so he can kind of guide him. But it's a worry at these times. You know, the kids that are trying to break through. You know, what happens to them if they haven't got football? Where do they go? It's kind of like
it's a hot topic at the moment, isn't it? The player welfare side of it, pathways outside the game and education and.
That's it.
I think, obviously, with that tragic story of the young lad from Man City it is so sad. But I think from a club or even a parent perspective, really, I think to have those realistic conversations with, but not everybody's going to make it. Although you're getting offered a scholarship or coming through a club, there's only ever a very small percentage that do go on and have sort of
a career. Yes.
Careers. So I think as long as you're sort of honest and open and communicate throughout the whole process with players, then it won't be such a bombshell, if you like, when you sort of get released. But I think being back at the club now and obviously getting involved with the academy a little bit more, I think it is a big part of the game. Sort of getting boys prepared for life outside of football. Because let's be honest, it might not be getting released. You might get injured, break your leg, and then
break your leg. Yeah.
Anything. So it's preparing boys or players enough to be able to cope in the outside world. So although you're sort of all the training and the football side of it, you want to sort of help them as much as you can. I think nowadays with everything that's going on with mental health and all of that sort of stuff, having a good network and support network at clubs is vital now.
Vital, yeah, massively so, yeah. No, good point. One nil,
So going back to your story, Jono, there was a nasty rumour that you were going to go to Leeds, which upset me enormously. What happened with the Leeds move? Or was that just a rumour, or was that definite?
It was a bit of a rumour, bit of truth. I think it was at the end of the Premier League season. My agent had spoken to David O'Leary. There was sort of potential opportunity at the end of that season, but I got injured in the United game, and I was pretty much out for 2 years after that.
That's a long time,
I ruptured my cruciate, ruptured my lateral ligaments, did my cartilage. I sort of had the operation, went to this surgeon in Cambridge, and I just couldn't get back fit. I kept stupidly going back to see the same surgeon, to be fair, and he just kept saying that scar tissue, you got to get through it, push through it. But every time I started running, my knee just kept swelling up. So I'd have to wait for another month for that to go down before I could start working again. And I think I came back at the end of that season. I think we played Gillingham away. I think Paolo scored, Paolo Venezza.
Mm-hmm. There's a name.
But I remember running on the pitch and like my knee just didn't feel right. I pushed my way through. I come on a sub. But that pre-season, Viali had come in. Viali was in. And he just said to me, he said, look, I'll take you to see my surgeon in Rome, Mariani, Dr. Mariani.
Okay.
And then I had a surgeon who was from Australia who I knew. He was actually lecturing in Belgium, in Bruges. So I went to see him as well with a fresh set of scans, and both of them just said, look, the graft is the new ligament. They've put it in the wrong place.
Oh, my God.
Blimey.
So I was trying to get back fit for a year, had three more operations during that year as well. And at the end of it, it was nothing I could have done. It was just the ligament was in the wrong place, so it kept catching on the bone every time I ran.
Jesus.
So basically, I tried to sue him, to be fair, for negligence. But the other surgeon who corrected it, the guy from Australia, I flew home and had it all sort of corrected.
Yeah.
He just said, look, he's done it differently than what I would have, and they didn't really want to go against another surgeon, if you like.
Okay.
That went nowhere. So I was pretty much out for another 11 months after that, 10 months.
So a fit Richard Johnson would have signed for Leeds, you think?
Potentially. I don't know. There was nothing set in stone, but yeah.
You'd have a really funny accent now.
Yeah. Yeah, quite mixed. Yeah. Yeah.
Who knows?
So you did play under Viali, didn't you? Did you play under Lewington as well, or was that towards the end of your time?
So I'd come back fit. Ray was manager, and I think they just brought Gavin Mann in and a few others. And just said, look, I appreciate how long you've been at the club and everything. He said, but you probably won't get much game time. Ray was a top guy. I didn't have any problems or anything like that. At least he was honest with me, you know. But I'd been out so long, I didn't want to just spend another season playing the odd game playing sort of reserve team football, if you like, or anything like that. But probably my biggest regret that season and leaving, the club had offered me a testimonial. I'd given up my testimonial just because I wanted to go and play. So, yeah, I probably look back at that and think I should have taken my testimonial, really.
Well, after 12 years, yeah. Yeah, you probably
should. That would have been a sellout, yeah.
Yeah, so I look back at that and sort of with a little bit of, not regret, but, yeah, maybe I should have taken that. But and then it was a struggle, really. I left, went to Colchester for a little bit, played a few reserve games, and they couldn't make a decision on me. And then Gifton phoned me up when he was up at Stoke.
I remember Stoke, yeah.
Yeah, so Gifton phoned me up and said, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm here, but they haven't offered me anything. So he told Tony Pulis to send someone to watch me play. And he sent his right-hand man at the time, Lindsay. And he came and watched me play, and then Tony Pulis signed me. But it was sort of a week-by-week thing, or pay as you play. So
yeah,
I was living in St Albans and travelling up to Stoke So being away from home, quite hotel Monday, Tuesday, come home Wednesday, then go back sort of Thursday, Friday, and
it's not ideal, is it?
Yeah, it wasn't good fun, to be fair. And his training was hard.
was
traveling all that way just to run me up.
Was he bad? He was
good though, Tony. I really liked him. You knew what you were going to get. There was no airs and graces. Pretty much a bit like GT in terms of if you gave your all, then he would back you, you know.
But, yeah.
So I went there, played a few games. He sort of had two teams, Tony. So he'd have a home team and then an away team, if you like. So I'd always play just in that holding midfield role when we went away from home, played away games, which was good. They had a good squad there. I enjoyed my time. And then Kenny phoned me up when he was at QPR. Ian Holloway. So he asked if I wanted to come there. So, and that was obviously just down the road, training wise. So I got to move back home.
Closer than Stoke.
A lot more manageable, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So I went and played probably about the last, I don't know, 12 games of the season. We ended up getting promoted on the last day. We played away at Sheffield Wednesday and got promoted into the Championship with QPR.
So you would have been in the same team as. Who else went to QPR and got promoted? Someone else went.
Palms was there.
Who?
Yeah, mate.
Palms, yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
So, well,
I vaguely remember somebody.
Boys have got connection with QPR, haven't they? Hyde has been there. Tommy Smith. I think Dom Foley went for a little bit.
Yeah, there was right, someone we spoke to. And it might have been.
Yeah, there's someone we've spoken to recently played for QPR as well. I can't remember.
And he got promoted.
Yeah, I can't remember who it was.
That would have been 2004, probably.
Yeah, 04, 05, yeah. I can't remember it was now. But you're right, Carl. Someone we've spoken to did talk about this.
Recently got promoted, didn't they? Yeah, I remember it.
So that was with Kevin Gallen, Mark Burcham, Martin Rowlands, Gareth Ainsworth.
Decent players.
All those boys.
Gareth Ainsworth, yeah.
Yeah, so good team. Marcus Bignett, I think he's a manager now. But yeah, and then obviously the next season come around, start the Championship. I played the first few games and then I was sort of in and out the team a little bit. And I've got to be honest with you, that sort of 2 years being injured was a hard slog mentally. Sort of
took its toll on you.
A long time.
Yeah, it just sort of killed me.
Were you ever the same afterwards? Could you always feel the knee, or you're always conscious of it?
Not so much the knee. It didn't stop me going in for tackles or anything like that, but I just didn't have the same urgency. Like, I could see things happening, but you just couldn't quite get there.
Couldn't get there, yeah.
It must be frustrating,
Because of that first year, I couldn't really do much. I lost quite a lot of muscle on the outside of my leg, and I just really struggled to get that back. Power and fitness, and I was never that quick anyway, but it just didn't really come back. It was a hard slog.
Hello, this is Bill Leslie, and you're listening to the Do Not Scratch Your Eyes podcast.
Tell us actually why, because I know Justin's still recording this. Tell us your version of events, because Michael Hyde told us a story that he might have upset your missus once at an end of season party. Did he throw a drink over, if I recall?
An expensive dress, I think he said, didn't he?
Is that what he said? He threw it?
Yeah, he said that.
He did throw it, but he threw up.
And then you laughed, apparently.
Oh, he threw up.
I'm
not sure that was the story you told us, was it?
He didn't tell us that.
No, he didn't tell us that. He said it was a Vivienne Westwood dress.
His actual words were, I might have spilled a drink over her rather expensive dress.
Yeah, that's what he said.
No, it was a little bit of, he did throw it, but up.
That's quality. Well, that's changed everything. That's changed everything.
One too many brandies or something. Vanessa had to take her dress off and was stood in the ladies' toilets trying to wash it off before. This was before the dinner.
Oh my God! It wasn't even the end of the night.
Whoops!
Fantastic! Yeah. Oh, fantastic! Yeah.
Right, punters questions. Here we go. So this comes, first question, Paul Baker. What's Jono's favourite goal? He's given his one, which was against Bristol City away.
That's my one as well.
That's your favourite.
Volley, wasn't it?
Carlisle.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, another one. What was the keeper doing with that?
Yeah, he said...
That was from about 40 yards out.
40 yards out, yeah.
But
Bristol City is your favourite, yeah?
Yeah, definitely. Just the sort of timing of it, the volley, it was quite brilliant. A way out. And yeah. I'd actually Missed all of pre-season. I think that was my first game back. I ruptured my thigh in pre-season, and that was my first game back. So, yeah, pretty special.
Why do you think you scored so many long-range shots? Because, as I said, I watched a montage just before we spoke to you, and they were all outside the box, more or less first time.
Screamers.
Yeah,
even the one against Luton.
Why do you think you were sort of not doing sort of tap-ins in the box and stuff, and you were whacking them from so far? Did you practice that, by the way? Yeah, was that a practicing thing?
Just sort of come naturally, really. I find it hard to answer that when people ask. But I was always sort of a clean striker of the ball anyway. And I remember we might have played, Glenn Rhoda was manager, I think we might have played Swindon away or something. I was like trying to shoot from everywhere. Got in a half time and he's like, "Will you stop trying to shoot from like 35 yards?" He said, "They're never going to go in like that." And then obviously
a season later, they
started flying in. So.
That's a nice confidence kicker, isn't it? Yeah. Oh, sorry about that.
Will he stop?
I don't know. It's just one of them things.
You must have heard everyone going, "Shoot!" Because as soon as the ball came to you in the midfield, even if there wasn't a shot on, everyone was going, "Shoot!"
Yeah.
I've got to be honest with you. When that first started, I thought I was getting booed, to be fair.
that's a question. That was my next question.
Oh, was it a question?
So
sorry.
Jason's question.
Sorry, Jason.
So I used to, you know, before the games, they read out the team sheet and everything, and I used to start when number 10 Richard Johnson, whatever, then it'd be shoot, but I'd be thinking, they've done boo me already, I haven't even kicked the ball yet.
It wasn't that.
What's going on here?
I was just going to say, it was weird. You'd be in the crowd and you'd watch the play and you'd suddenly see the ball go to you in the midfield and everyone, it didn't matter if the shot was on or not, everyone would just go, shoot. As if you didn't know that we wanted you to do that for a start. You know, as if you didn't know we expected you to do it. But when they flew in, that was...
One of my favourite goals as well wasn't during the season. We played Tottenham at home pre-season.
Oh, was that Klinsmann?
It was Klinsmann's.
Yes, I remember this.
And I scored a screamer.
Ian Walker was in goal, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I remember that goal.
And that bounced around, but that's probably one of the...
If I remember that game, the rookery was being built and every ball was like going over. And they were just... And I think at one point they ran out of balls. Hang on. Just before you get a ball, I do remember that game with fond memory because it was sold to the fans as Jurgen Klinsmann's debut.
That was it, pretty much. And I think I might have come on as I can't really remember, but I remember because when I was at Liverpool on trial, there was Mrs. Salisbury used to live across the road from Anfield and in this big old house, and she used to house the apprentices and any trialists and everything, and I was on the top floor, and Jamie Redknapp turned up. It was just when he left Bournemouth. So I remember I was rooming in the same room with Jamie Redknapp whilst I was on trial. And obviously I didn't know who he was.
No.
But then years later, sort of whenever we bumped in, we'd used to say hello and stuff like that. And I remember, I think he might have been playing in that game and or one game at Vicarage Road. I'd come on a sub or something and like the crowd went nuts. So, John. And he was like, "Shit, you've done all right, haven't you?" Thinking back to that day, so yeah,
oh, it's fantastic.
Loads of memories like that, which is good to look back on.
Yeah, no, that's cool. Right, well, you've answered Jason's question, so we can skip that one. Oh, okay, and Dave's kind of got this one, but again, you kind of answered this. So, what was your favourite goal you scored? His was the winning goal in injury time. I remember this at home to Wolves. So that was Graham Taylor's. First one back. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was my first goal as well. So, yeah, that was a... You look back at that now, and because the ball got sort of headed out or whatever, and my first touch wasn't great.
Touch of a bricklayer.
I was lucky it come off his studs and had a little bit of backspin on it. I just ran up, and belted it. And I think Neil Emblem, had just scored the equaliser for them a little bit before that. Yeah, I remember everybody jumping in on a pile in our own half, and I think they tried to take a quick quick kickoff.
Quicker, yeah, to get down the other end. Just a question for me. Just to cover it, what are you doing at the club at the moment, Jono? What's your kind of role? Because I know it's come out. You've been at the club or back with the club for quite some time, and even I've had that sort of correspondence with you, what you were doing before. But just explain for the guys that are listening, what's your new role? What are you doing now?
Yeah, so obviously I've been back at the club nearly 3 years full time now. I worked on the commercial team, selling the seasonal hospitality, if you like, the advertising packages, looking at sponsorship sort of deals and things like that. So it's pretty much similar sort of role. Obviously, the academy to a degree, obviously to be a Cat 2, they get funding from the Premier League, and obviously the club invests money to sort of operate it, if you like. But obviously with sort of the way football's gone at the minute and the current climate financially for everything, I've sort of gone there to look at it a little bit more commercially. Potential local businesses getting involved sponsorship-wise, or a little bit of advertising with the club, so just little bits and pieces that can try and help, but predominantly it's to give the boys opportunities. So I want to get enough on board so we can offer every age group at least an international tour or a tournament within the UK.
Wow.
To go out and have that experience playing against different cultures, different teams and things like that. So a big driving force for me is to give the players opportunities. Just things like, I know sort of post-COVID, obviously, when we're allowed to travel again, but I know from personal experience, when I was in the youth team, we used to go play tournaments at the end of the season in France. And I think it just, you learn to grow up quite quickly as a player.
Yeah, yeah.
Play against different cultures and styles of football. So That's a big sort of driving force for me. Also, what we touched on earlier about player welfare.
Yeah.
I'd like to set up a mentor program for the boys. So, obviously, I've got history of coming through the youth here. But just boys like Gifton, Robbo, Doyley, Tommy Smith, Pagey, Gibbo. Players that have come through our academy and gone on to have careers. And
yeah,
I suppose as well, because of the catchment area that we are, like Jordan, Jadon Sancho, like the bigger clubs can come picking from Watford. But I think if we can have that sort of feel of that the players are loved and the communication with the parents is on point and get an idea of their pathway of what it could be at the club, then I think we've got a better chance to hold on to players. So
yeah, I mean that's a huge issue, isn't it? For even as a supporting, you know, trying to build supporters as outside of it, is the catchment area is a huge issue. You've got Spurs, Arsenal, Chelsea's down the road, and straight away it's the Premier League sort of dreaming team. And you know, I think Watford does very well on the values of what. Going back, what Graham had, you know, the family values. And I know people who support Arsenal or Chelsea who bring their kids to Watford because it's that kind of way to get kids into football and get into the environment, you know, because Watford's it's kind of a safer environment, let's say, than going to Chelsea in their heads. I'm not saying it is, but of course, but I think that's brilliant. And, you know, I hope that goes really well for you, because that's a real it's a massive thing in football at the moment, massive thing, you know, and it needs to be addressed, because as you covered, you know, the poor lad from Man City, and I'm sure there's other horror stories out there where you know they just don't make it, and if football's their life, and you know, I know that as a supporter, and Justin, we're the same, football's every, you know, that's what I do. Without COVID, I went to football, you know, that was it was the day, and it wasn't a lot of the times, and I'll tell you the truth, a lot of the times football ruined the bloody day, because like we travel the other end of the country and it would be, you know, we get stuffed and, oh, for God, so we've got 4 hours to go home. But it wasn't about that. It was about being with your mates and singing together, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And it is, especially for men, because we don't say enough. We don't say that we're down and we're feeling a bit crappy. And, you know, if anyone, I'm glad it's all now a conversation that we're able to have. And, you know, if the club are backing it from a young age, that's brilliant. You know, that's the family club that I love.
And sort of for me, it's sort of coming back home, really. Obviously, the upbringing I had with Kenny Jackett and sort of the values he instilled in me. Listen, it wasn't easy, don't get me wrong. But I think as long as you're having honest and open conversations with players throughout the whole process and with the family as well, and it's manage those expectations, if you like, then it can only be a good thing. So yeah, that will be a big part of it as well. But yeah, just looking at sort of getting connected with local businesses that sort of have a connection with the club, and just looking for a bit of sort of financial support to help support the boys, really, coming through.
No, cool.
That's great.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, that's best great. Of luck with that. That's awesome.
On a totally different topic, Jono, how do you see our season panning out? Because obviously this season's been a bit odd. We've had some very bad football, I'm going to say. But now there's a definite lift. There's a definite lift. So what do you reckon? Do you reckon we're going to go up? Do you reckon we're going to go up automatically?
Well, it's in our own hands, isn't it, now?
Yeah.
So we've got that little buffer. It's better to have the points on the board than have sort of games in hand, in my sort of opinion, anyway. I think Tom Cleverley's not far off being fit. But listen, the squad we've got, we should be top two, in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah.
And I think when Vlad was in, it was probably a little bit too defensive the way we played, and sort of too structured 4-4-2. We didn't really sort of come away from that theme. But I think Cisco's come in. He's so bubbly and energetic, and don't get me wrong, it took him a little bit to find his feet and
and
stuff like that. But I think changing the system to 4-3-3, getting Will Hughes back in the middle of that park, top level, he's obviously been a standout, and then given Saar the freedom in that sort of role.
To go and express himself,
Yeah, exactly. Before that, he was sort of having to track back and do a little bit of defending, and teams were doubling up on him or getting really tired. There was just no space or opportunities. But he seems to be sort of coming in off the line now, getting in little pockets, picking things up, but he's running in behind. So we're just playing really well, so we're good shape. And I've got to be honest, I get a feeling, well, I know it because I'm there all the time, the sense of togetherness that we've got now that I haven't seen in a few years.
That's good to hear. Absolutely.
I know probably the game against Bournemouth, you don't want to see that live on telly, but as a manager, I would have been so proud that they all stuck together and they were all in it together.
This is what we've said. We've said this.
The owners probably aren't too happy at the fine, but
But I think that game kind of galvanised the whole situation, and it's come out as well that I think they had a good strong conversation about the Coventry performance up at in Birmingham, because it wasn't pretty. But you know, me and Justin have been doing this podcast pretty much through COVID, so we've kind of seen the two halves of this season, and you know, the difference is just, you know, night and day. It's just incredible.
And that's down to the players, really. The attitudes of the players, and just feeling comfortable in a system that suits the players. And listen, that they've been brilliant for me. But looking towards the end of the season, you look at those last four games: Norwich, Brentford, Millwall, and Swansea. Last game of the season. So
it's going to be
our own head.
I'd like to have promotion wrapped up at Kenilworth Road. To be fair, that's kind of my dream. I'd like to go and confirm it there at Kenilworth Road. So that's what, four games from the end. So I'm probably going to struggle, but but it'd be nice.
That would be nice.
No, listen, everyone's positive. We've got a great chance. I can't see any reason why we shouldn't be in that top two, but
fantastic.
Yeah, there's a long way to go, I suppose.
There is. It's a championship. You never know, do you? But fingers crossed.
Hi, everyone. It's Nick Wright. You're listening to Do Not Scratch Your Eyes podcast.
I just want to say, look, as a fan and all the work that you know you're doing, but as a player, I want to go back to that. It was an absolute honour to watch you in the yellow and the goals you scored. And listen, you're always going to be up there as not just as my favourite player, but do you know what, as a personality, because whenever I speak to you on the phone or whatever, you are the nicest bloke to talk to, and I mean that, and never change, because honestly I can't speak highly enough of you. Honestly, you're everything that encapsulates Watford, you know. Yeah. So well done,
champion. Thank you.
Right, are you gonna pay me for that now? for me,
Jono, it was a pleasure watching you play for us. I just used to love watching you play. You played with such spirit and fun, and you know the long range goals just sort of topped it off, I think. So yeah, I was so pleased when Carl said Richard's gonna come on the podcast. I was like, oh, fantastic, that's fantastic. So yeah. I'm really
anytime.
So grateful
anytime.
For you to come
on. Yeah, if you've got anything, need to fill a gap, just give us a shout.
Mate, we'll definitely come back to you, especially at the end of the season.
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do, Jono, right? Because I've got the pub, if we ever do a... I assume you're local, aren't you? Obviously, don't.
No, I'm round in Brentwood now.
Oh, you're down there, are you?
Yeah. So when we move back from Australia, this is where my wife's family... So
got you. Well, fairly enough, we'd get you in the pub and do something in the pub. You know, there's a few beers I owe you for the goals. I mean, you scored 20 goals, so that's 20 points, isn't it?
I'm in Northwood quite a bit, to be fair. I've got a couple of mates there, so...
Cool. Yeah. All right, well, we'll try and sort something.
Fantastic,
then.
Yeah, I'll
next
be there.
Week.
It's not open yet, are you?
There'll be a knock at the door.
We don't open till the 12th, go
there'll
away.
There'll be a tent in the beer garden.
So that's our Australian, don't worry about him. Yeah, yeah. Jono, it's been
have a good one, mate.
Absolute
Top
pleasure.
Yourself.
Thank you.
Cheers, buddy.
Thank you.
Mate.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around, you got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.